on one of our groups going to Oberammergau for the Passion Play some weeks ago, my brother-in-law, Steve Wilkie, and his wife, Beth, joined us. Steve and I were out walking one day, and I don't really remember the context of the conversation, but sort of out of the blue, he said, you know, if I were in a desperate situation, let's say I was stranded somewhere, next to the Bible, I would want to have a hymnal with me. And I thought, you know, that makes sense. Because sometimes we need more than words. We need a song that lifts us from focus on our discouragement. The leader of the Protestant Reformation, Martin Luther, during a 10-month period in which he was holed away in a castle for fear of his life, living under an alias name, devoted his attention in the midst of his discouragement to translating the New Testament and the Book of Psalms into German. 400 years later, a Lutheran pastor in Germany named Klaus Westermann was conscripted to fight against his will in the German army in World War II. He was captured in the Russian front and put in a Russian prison with other prisoners of war. The only thing he was allowed to keep with him in the prison was Luther's translation of the New Testament and Psalms. He said one day the prisoners circled up for a worship service and they read the 103rd Psalm from this copy which he had on him. Listen to his reflection of that experience. We were standing with our heads bowed, stooped over. But afterward, I thought, that's not the way to praise God. Such a psalm has to be spoken with joy, your head raised, your body erect. In that experience, I learned the difference between real praise and our notion of prayer. Then I began my dissertation, writing on a little board, sometimes trading bread for paper. It was then that I discovered that the Psalms of the Old Testament really come out of human experience. Klaus Westermann went on to be a great theologian, but his call and his renewed hope came from a Russian prison, hearing ancient words of a psalmist inviting him to lift his head, to look up. That's our focus today. In the book of Psalms. In this series, we're touching on different categories of Psalms. And 2 weeks ago, we started with a Psalm of Trust. Last week, we looked at the largest category of Psalms of the 150 we have in the Old Testament, a Psalm of Lament. Today, we are looking at the 121st Psalm, a Psalm of Praise. I will lift up my eyes to the Lord. From whence does my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. This is also known as a psalm of ascent. It comes out of the 15 psalms, number 120 to 134, that are known by this title, Psalms of Ascent. And they get that name because they are believed to have been used as part of pilgrimage festivals when people traveled in groups to a holy festival in Jerusalem. So it's an ascent because the people had to climb up. Jerusalem is one of the highest elevated cities in Israel at about 2,500 feet above sea level. As you can perhaps see, if your eyes are good enough to focus in on Jerusalem right in the middle, it's at the top of those hills. And then it's modern-day Jordan to the far right. So in Israel, coming from just about any direction, you would have to climb, you would have to go upward. And imagine if you're a part of a pilgrimage in which you've been traveling for days and now you're within sight of the holy city. Look at this. You would look up and see something like that, the temple. And let's understand, the temple is not just a building. This is believed to be the place that housed the divine presence. You are looking up at God. What is the psalmist saying? I look up And this, I know, is where my help comes from. It comes from the Lord. It's sort of like the statement that Corrie ten Boom, the Holocaust survivor, made one time. She said, if you look at the world around you, you'll get distressed. If you look within yourself, you'll get depressed. But if you look at God, you will be at rest. That's the message of Psalm 121. Look up. Look up from the discouragement around you to the one who is your helper. Look up from your busyness every day to the one who is your real source of contentment and stability in life. Look up from the world around you, from all the distractions, to the one who says, peace, be still. Look up. The psalmist reminds us that sometimes when we want things to look up in life, it begins with our choice to look up. Now, there are a couple of things I want you to pay attention to in this psalm. And the first one is the change of tense in the first two verses from the rest of the psalm. The first two verses are personally spoken, first person. Look at the verse again, and you'll notice that the personal pronouns are underlined. And as I say the verse, I want you to say those pronouns out loud with me. It starts with, I lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence does my help come? My help comes from the Lord. You get that strong, personal affirmation of faith. I lift up my eyes. My help comes from the Lord. But notice what changes now with verse 3, and it continues for the rest of the psalm. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. He who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Why the change of tense? Why does it go from first person to third person? Old Testament professor John Hayes speculates about this. He believes that this pilgrimage psalm was meant to be used particularly at the start of a pilgrimage, at the outset. And he imagines that when people went on a pilgrimage festival, they would gather from different locations to a central meeting spot. Maybe people from a lot of different villages in a nearby area, and they would come and say, we're going to start at this day, at this time, let's all meet there. Kind of like when groups go on a trip from the church. They say, let's meet in the church parking lot. And every group like that needs a super organizer, planner type Enneagram 8 to lead them. How many of you are an Enneagram 8? Do we have any 8s? Those of you who've done the Enneagram? Okay, we've got some work to do here. You got to have Enneagram 8s, because if you don't have an Enneagram 8, all of the rest of us will spend all day long in the parking lot talking about what a good time we're going to have, but we never get anywhere. You got to have a leader who says, okay, I'm checking the list. John, is John here? John's coming from Nazareth. All right, where's Mary? Mary's coming from Cana. Is Mary here? Mary's here. Okay, they make sure everybody's there, and they're ready to go. And imagine the people who might be in the group. You've probably got at least a few young people, and this is the first time they've left mom and dad at home to go on a trip. There's some anxiety, there's some uncertainty. You've probably got a few elderly people, and they're a little bit frail. And there's probably a son or daughter who's been trying to talk mom and dad out of going. This could be dangerous. What if you slip and you fall and you break your leg halfway there? What are you gonna do? And the parent says, would you stop? I'm going. You're not going to stop me. There may be somebody who's dealing with a health issue, and some friends have come to see that person off. And maybe they've tried to say to their friend, are you sure you can do this? Are you sure? And the friend said, I need to do this. I need to go. So there are the pilgrims, and then there are all the people from the community who have come to see them off. And just like we might do when we leave on a trip from the church, our Enneagram 8 leader will say, okay, before we start, let's say a prayer. Except in this case, the leader says, let's sing as we begin. And the pilgrims would start walking. And as they walk, they sing, I lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence does my help come? It comes from the Lord. And as they keep walking now, they hear the rest of the people who came to see them off start to sing. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you does not slumber. He who keeps Israel never slumbers nor sleeps. That's why the tense changes. The pilgrims do their singing, but they hear a whole community of faith singing over them as they go, letting them know that they're not on this journey alone. There's somebody keeping faith with them. Why has that psalm been powerful through the years? We don't take pilgrimages like that anymore. Because people ever since that time understood that the psalmist wasn't just talking about a trip to Jerusalem. The psalmist is talking about the pilgrimage of life, the pilgrimage everybody is on, whether they acknowledge it or not. We are all on a journey home one day, but not the home in this world. We're on a journey to go meet with God. And sometimes our faith personally is not enough to get us through. We need the faith of others too. I remember reading one time about a church that was grappling with the question, do people need the church? They had been hearing all of the studies that were being done about people who said, we don't want to go to church anymore. We don't need church. We get along just fine without church. And so they decided to bring their whole congregation together one evening to sit at tables of about 6 or 8 people and discuss that question. And after a while, they allowed anybody to stand up and share whatever they felt was an important statement. A gentleman stood up who had been like a pillar in the church. He never missed a Sunday. He was always there every week, and he shocked everyone when he said, I don't know that I do. And then he explained. He said, I'm here every Sunday mainly because I've always got a job to do. I make the coffee. Some Sundays I usher. There's always a reason I have to be here, so I come. But every now and then, my faith is not that strong. And I don't know that I believe what everybody else believes. I don't sing because I don't believe the words in the hymn. I don't say the creed because that Sunday, I just don't believe it. And I've got too much integrity to say what I don't believe. He said, but when I hear the church sing and when I hear the people say the creed, I realize that sometimes I depend on the faith of the church for my faith. That's why I need church. Has your faith ever looked like that? Have you ever found that your faith alone has just not been sufficient at times to get you through your pilgrimage? And you need the faith of others. I got an interesting email at the start of this week. It was from a gentleman who worshiped at the 11 o'clock service in the chapel last Sunday. It was a psalm of lament last week. And you might remember, if you were here last Sunday, that I ended saying that sometimes we have no control over the things that go wrong or go bad in our lives, except for a stubborn attitude. We just get stubborn with God and we say, God, I'm not giving up. I want to hear from you. Well, there was a gentleman standing at the door of the chapel as I greeted people in the hallway, and as it got to the end, I wasn't sure if he wanted to talk or not, so I just walked over to him and started talking, and he was obviously deeply, deeply moved. He acknowledged that he was battling cancer. But he chose that day to be stubborn. And so we prayed. Sunday evening, he sent me this email. "Thank you, Pastor Rob. Once again, you and your wonderful congregation got me through another day and on my way to another week of living and serving. God knows why I'm suffering. You meet and serve so many deserving souls, and I'm grateful you took a moment, made eye contact, and saw another in need of prayer. After our prayer this morning, I went home and sat on the porch and started reading the book of Psalms in the beautiful sun. I connected with the internal struggles and cries of plea told in Psalm 1, verses 1 through 4. I had to lay it down. With tears in my eyes, I began to pray, 'Dear God, so long have I turned my attention and intentions in a direction not meant for me. I made it about me and all about me. I believe I needed the attention of people. I needed to believe I was worthy and loved by all at all cost, when all I ever needed was you, our Lord and Savior, Selah. Now I will be stubborn and humble. I will not ever again waver from my belief in Christ again, for it is he who sacrificed his life to make a righteous path through the unrighteousness of people. If I had not strayed and stayed on that path, I might not have lost so much of myself in my life. Selah. Lord, I'm not asking for a miracle. The cure my body needs requires more. I'm not asking for a quick fix to my ever so broken heart. Only time will determine how much of a scar will remain. Today, I filled in the blank that for me meant teaching and clarifying my need. My need, Father, is just to know you're listening. Selah." That word Selah appears in 39 Psalms. It's used 71 times. It's like choir, a rest symbol in music. And you all know what that means. When you see the rest symbol, what are you supposed to do? Rest, not sing. Take a breath. You see that in some of the Psalms because they were written as songs. And what it was saying to people is pause. I love how he included that in there. Because of an experience of the faith of the community, it gave him a reason to go home and look up, and pause. And remember, God, it's you I really need. And be encouraged by that. Could it be that simple? Could sometimes the things that are just gnawing us to death, that are keeping us awake at night and so restless and tossed, torn, simply be the need to look up and remember that God is our keeper? That brings me to the second thing I want to pay attention to in this psalm. It's the repetition of the word keep or keeper. When the community sings their part, verses 3 through 8, that word appears 6 times in the 6 verses. Listen to them again. "The God who keeps you does not slumber. The God who keeps Israel never slumbers or sleeps. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord will keep you from all evil. The Lord will keep your life." What's the psalmist saying? Goodness gracious, don't forget. You have a keeper. And then my favorite, the last verse of the psalm. "The Lord will keep your going out and coming in from this time forth and forevermore." What does that mean? Years ago, when I was working on my first book on the I Am sayings of Jesus, in studying where Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd," I gained an appreciation for this verse. The shepherd's job is to protect the sheep, to keep them safe. So whether they're in a village or whether they're out in the open field, the shepherd must have a location where the sheep can be taken at night, like a sheep pen, where there's a rock wall, there's a fence, there's something. And with every sheep enclosure, there's a door. There's an opening where the sheep go out. Now, when they go out, what are they going out to? They're going out to pasture. And in the early morning, with the fresh dew on the grass, you're not only eating, you're getting water. And in a dry, arid environment like that region, that water is what you need. There's delight, there's joy in the morning when the sheep go out to fresh pasture. But come night, the sheep need to be brought back into a place of safety. because there will be predators. There will be things intending to hurt them. So in order to have peace, they need to have security. They go out for joy, they come in for security. Out for joy, in for peace. The Lord will keep watch. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in. The Lord will be your source of peace and joy. Too often, I allow my peace and joy in life to get stolen. And the more honest way to say that is too often, I give away my peace and joy. And I have to be reminded to look up at my source of peace and joy. I learned this when I hit the wall in ministry 10 years in. I'd been in ministry out of seminary for 10 years, serving as a senior pastor and my first senior pastor at church. Things started out great in this appointment. The people were welcoming and warm, and the church started growing right off the bat. But after a few years, some tension started forming with all of the new people coming into church and the folks who had been there for a long time feeling like they were losing control of their church. Conflict started surfacing all over the place. And as sometimes happens in churches, the conflict started coming at the pastor. And I just didn't know how to handle that well. And it was wearing me down. And then to make matters worse, we were without a music director. And there was a person in the community who had attended the Juilliard School of Music in New York. Just a person who would be ideal for the job. I had vacation coming up. Susan and I were going to go alone, get away from the kids. The kids are going to be taken care of by her parents so we could have a little time in Colorado. And I thought, I need to get this job filled. I asked this person several times. She turned me down. Finally, right before I go out of town, I got a letter from her. A 3-page letter telling me why she would not take this job, because she had heard in the community about all the conflict in the church. I came home. I threw the letter down. I said, the last thing I need is somebody not in my church telling me there's conflict in the church. And Susan looked at me and said, I know we are supposed to go together on this trip, but I'm not going with you. You're going to go by yourself. You need to be alone. And after a week, I'll come join you. I thought, great. Now my wife doesn't even want to be with me. The family dog would not even sit and let me pet the dog. Here's the icing on the cake. The morning I leave, Susan drives me to the Asheville airport. It's a 7 a.m. flight. I'm there at 5:30. I stand in line for an hour to check my bags. I get to the counter finally, and the gate agent says, no more bags will be checked. I said, you can't do that. I'm flying into Albuquerque. I have a 4-hour ride to get to my place in Colorado. My bags have to go with me. She got on the computer screen. She said, your bags will go out on another flight. They will arrive 5 hours after you do. I got in my seat. The flight took off. I pulled out a legal pad and started crafting a letter to the president of U.S. Air. What kind of operation are you running here anyway? I mean, I got out all of my stuff going on. Got to Albuquerque, got a rental car, went to eat lunch, came back to the airport, walked around it 40, 80, 100 times. My bag finally got there, put it in the car. I start driving out of town. I'm in a hurry to get there, and somewhere close to Santa Fe, when I got away from all of the traffic, I just thought, why am I in a hurry? I'm not going to a meeting. No one's waiting on me when I get there. There's going to be nothing going on. What am I in a hurry for? So I started slowing down. And as I was getting close to the Colorado line, I was in one of those sort of stereotypical Western scenes where you could see the San Juan Mountains in the distance on a road that looked very much like this one. A long distance down, and then it went up toward the hills, and there was no one in sight, not a car. And as I started getting close to the mountains, guess what I saw? An eagle flying around one of the rock peaks, and it just kept circling and circling and circling. I pulled the car off the road and turned off the engine. I got out and I just laid down on the hood with my back on the windshield, just put my hand behind my hands behind the head and just looked up at this sight. And as I was lying there, something happened that has never happened again in my life. God put a song in my heart. It was the words of the 121st Psalm. I don't know why the words of that psalm came to me, but they did. And with the words, this melody came. And it was clear as could be in my head. And I didn't want to lose it. So I got back and reached into the car and got that legal pad out, flipped over from the letter to the president of US Air. And I started trying to draw the music notes. I'm not a musician, but I played in band in school. I tried to remember enough to be able to capture the music that was inside of me. I mean, really, that's it. That's the story. I went on to the place where I was staying. I had a good few days alone. I got rest. I felt at peace. Susan got there. We had a great vacation. When I got back to my office, there was a stack of mail on the desk, and on the very top was a phone message. It was from that music director who kept turning me down. I called. She said, I need to tell you something strange that happened to me about 10 days ago. I woke up early one morning. My husband said, what's wrong? She said, I felt like God just said to me, you don't want to close the door on that job. We met, we talked. She ended up coming to the church. And for the next 10 years, amazing things happened. I tell you that, but I don't want you to focus on that. Because what's significant is not what happened in the church, it's what happened in me. I became a different person that day. I did not become a perfect person, but I became a different person because of that. Because I looked up. When I got to the place where I was staying that night, when that experience happened, it all of a sudden occurred to me that had my bag gotten to me when I arrived, I would have never seen that. It was the evening sun hitting the mountains, just the right moment of that. None of that would have ever happened had life gone the way I wanted it to. But because life didn't go the way I wanted to, I experienced God telling me what I most needed to remember, that I have a keeper. So I pulled out that old sheet of music, and several weeks ago I sat down with Jeff and Emery, the worship leader in our contemporary service, and talked through this song, and they put it to music, proper music. And so Michael is going to play, and Kim is going to lead us in singing, and just like Eagle's Wings, there's a refrain that Kim will start in singing, and we're invited to sing the refrain and then to hear the main verses she will lead and join in the refrain, and I think we'll close with another verse of Eagle's Wings. So, let us stand.